Well, if you're like me, some of those words I didn't always understand because I didn't grow up singing that fast. And maybe if you are a little bit older than me, you're like, why in the world did we do that? Well, because sometimes when we reach a point in life, we get kind of unaware of some of the things that people are battling and facing in different places, and they're asking this question, where is the love? So if we don't get anything more this morning, you know where it is, don't you? In the toboggan. Okay? Where is the love? It's in the toboggan. And while that sounds awful cute and maybe even corny a bit, it is illustrative of the fact that we've got a world that observes what's going on all around us, and yet they still have that question. Maybe you could look up the lyrics of that song by the Black Eyed Peas, and you could read what they're really saying, and you could go, wow, that's a mouthful, and they had a hard time getting it all out for my ears to get it all the way, but boy, they really have a pulse on what really is going on in the world and how people really are wondering, where is it? So this morning, what I want to suggest is from our text. It's in 1 Corinthians 13. I read it a minute ago out of the message. You can turn there and look at it. I also want you to have in mind Proverbs 25, verses 21 and 22, the two verses that I referenced with the children about heaping hot coals. And what I want us to think about this morning is that the church is an incubator of love in such a way that in our practicing of a difficult kind of love, let me say it again, in practicing a difficult kind of love, we actually have the opportunity to answer that big question in more ways than just handing out toboggans. So, what got me thinking about this is the fact that we have a problem with the word love, chiefly because when we think about love, we think about sentimentality. We think about that thing that someone gave us all those years ago, and it sat on a bookcase or a bookshelf, and we've had this really deep attraction to it. It contains lots of memories, but in the end, it's taking up space. We don't really do anything more than give it a passing glance. It just kind of sits there. It's a placeholder. It's a space taker. And when we talk about love in our particular world, sometimes we are talking about more of a sentimentality. And so when you hear us from time to time, and I've been challenged by some of you to say, now, listen, we talk about love a lot, but listen, there's got to be something more than that. Well, maybe what the issue is we maybe need to narrow down, hunker down on our definition of love. And so when we come to 1 Corinthians 13, of all the chapters, it's called the what chapter? The love chapter. When do you hear that chapter referenced most often? At weddings. And listen, I got to tell you a secret. You may remember when you got married, but there isn't a couple around that wants to hear a sermon at a wedding ceremony. Not one. In fact, most of them, unless it's recorded, don't even remember what the preacher said until he said, kiss the bride. It's just a blur. We're waiting really for it to get over and gone. We've waited so long, and let's get on with life. It would be really nice from time to time to stop long enough in the midst of one of those beautiful wedding ceremonies and all those decorations, family and friends, and really give the full weight of 1 Corinthians 13 to something more than the sentimental idea about, well, love solves everything. It's just love. But what do you mean when you talk about love? What exactly is that? And so when we really take the time to uncover what's going on here in this chapter, in fact, sometimes it seems so wildly out of place. I mean, read 1 Corinthians sometime. Maybe this afternoon, sit down and read through 1 Corinthians. And I'm going to tell you that when you get to chapter 13, you'll scratch your head. And you'll say, well, Paul started out chapter 12 talking about spirituals or spiritual gifts, and he gave these lists, and then chapter 14, he returns to that spiritual gift thing, and all of a sudden, smack in the middle of what's going on here, we get this love is patient, love is kind thing. And you're like, I know what happened. They found copies of 1 Corinthians and this chapter all by itself, and they just kind of said, where do we put it? Oh, it fit. Let's put it right here. But the reality is what's going on at the church in Corinth is not really altogether different than what goes on with us. I mean, the truth of the matter is no matter where we are, we do live in a world, just like we describe with the kids, where meanness is returned with meanness, unkindness with unkindness. We have a retaliatory culture. We have a culture that is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It is a setting or a scene where that really is what motivates and drives us. We sometimes do it so unconsciously that when we feel wrong, we have already thought, planned, and schemed, how can I get that person back? How can I pay them back? It's just become second nature. It's air we breathe. It's water we drink. It's dirt we kick our feet in. It's just the way it is. And the idea that we come to hear that Jesus is Lord, which is what Paul says in chapter 12 of 1 Corinthians, no one can say Jesus is Lord except by the Holy Spirit. So that is without the understanding of all that means that Jesus is Lord, that changes the world, turns it upside down, says that Caesar is not, but God is in Jesus. He says, in that change, all of a sudden we naively think, that all of a sudden, because we've encountered the love of God, we're going to love in the way God loves us. Was that a revelation? Is that a shock? Because here's what's even more startling, is we come to trust Jesus, and we say, you know, I think I want to get together with a group of people, and I want to sing some songs, I want to read some scriptures, I want to have some fellowship, and I guarantee, I bet that place is so loving. And then they come to church, and they find people who return meanness with meanness and unkindness with unkindness, who, once they're offended, even in church, think about ways to, how can I get even with those who've offended me? How can I one-up my offender? Now, we don't talk about that. We don't let anybody really in on that, you know, that thing. And what happens is that breaks the illusion. I mean, the illusion is that we're perfect. Isn't that how we got to ready this morning? We got ready to come to church, and we put on our best face and, you know, some clothes, and we came, and we want everybody to kind of see us the way we want to project ourselves. We don't really want to come letting people know that I really harbor some ill will towards somebody. I really wish someone were dead, or I really wish they would fall on terribly hard times. I can't believe they said that about me, did that to me, said that about my family, talked about my children that way, looked at my work that way. I can't believe that. You do come to church like that from time to time, don't you? The most inauthentic place on Sunday morning, church. You do come to church sometimes like that, yes? Yeah, we all do. If you're married, probably more often than not. Right? And what happens is disillusionment sets in. We look around and we go, this isn't at all what I thought it was going to be. Maybe there's another one that is all that I thought it was supposed to be. So we set sail. And then we find out that, man, I really like people in the abstract. I like the idea of people, but real people, man, they're a problem. Right? I mean, that's really how it works. And so if you've got that kind of thinking in mind, then you understand what's going on in Corinth. The Corinth church had the entire spectrum of a multi-ethnic, multicultural environment, and you thought that we were the ones who discovered multicultural and multi-ethnic. You couldn't live in Corinth and not understand that you were living in a place where there were many people of a different background, many people on the different socioeconomic scale. It was really an intersection. It was a shipping hub. It was a key part of a key city in the Roman Empire. If you went anywhere from east to west, generally you went through Corinth. If you had a boat, you certainly went through Corinth because they had the first Panama Canal. It was called the Corinthian Isthmus. And it was where, to keep boats from being dashed against the rocks out in the Mediterranean, they pulled the boats across on this isthmus to get them from one point to the other to safety. So every marketer, every business person who was involved in international trade at the time went through Corinth. And when they uncovered and they learned, they heard the missionaries and they came to trust Jesus and they said Jesus is Lord and not Caesar or Diana or Asclepius or any others whose temples were dotting all over Corinth, they thought, okay, well, let's go get together. And when they went together to go to church, they went together with all that odd mixture of all those experiences and backgrounds and ethnicities and all those habits and practices that had already formed them to be a particular kind of people, a particular kind of people who in the world were decidedly for themselves, who were decidedly for getting ahead, who were decidedly for making sure they got it before anyone else did. I mean, listen, we're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper here in a little bit, and chapter 11 is all about a group of people who didn't care that people in their own church were going hungry before the Lord's Supper. Boy, that sounds fun. I think I'd like to be part of that crew, right? I mean, that's really the cautionary thing that Paul writes in chapter 11 to say, hey, listen, before you take this meal unworthily, he's not talking about just any old sin. He's not talking about maybe you had this bad thought or bad thing. He's talking about the sort of perspective on those in your own midst who are going hungry and you don't care about it. In other words, he is saying, listen, if you don't care about people, you better stop and not participate in the Lord's Supper, because the Lord's Supper is all about people. See? So you get this situation where Paul is just, I mean, you can't read the letter without going, my goodness, how would anybody belong to that church? I mean, they had sex scandals. They had arguments, they had great conflict. I mean, you talk about breaking the ideal image of church. It's what always marvels me when I hear someone say, we'd like to get back to the New Testament church. And I'm going to go, which one? I want to get back to Corinth. I can't wait till the incest is running rampant. Oh, was that offensive? But it was. In the church. And Paul wrote to correct it and say, hey, whoa, time out. You can't do that. It doesn't matter how the world formed you out there. We're being formed differently in here. So we got to undermine all the ways and patterns and practices that you've decided that you're going to live your life, and it's now different in here. Out there, we use people. In here, we love people. Out there, we don't care what happens to them. In here, we provide care. Out there, we don't care if we're at war. In here, we're always working for peace. And so the very idea that anyone in any day, in any era, would go to a church and never expect there to be a problem is just delusional. Because we all like people in the abstract. We like them on Facebook. But how many have invited for coffee? Not very many. You'll tweet the dog at them. But if they say, hey, how about coffee slingers tomorrow at 10? I don't know you. Been following you for 2 years, but I don't know you. That's the world we live in. Disconnected, unconnected. We fill ourselves full of some sense of fulfillment because we got so many friends that aren't friends. And then we think that, well, I'm going to church and it all's going to be different. No, it's not either. You got to learn how to be a friend in church just like you got to learn how to be a friend anywhere else. And probably you got to learn what it is to be a real friend in church, because you remember there's that proverb, there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. If you haven't been practicing that out there, how are you going to know where to do it unless you got a place to start practicing that very notion, that very ideal? So Paul sits down and there's this group of people and they've opted and decided that some are better than others. Can you imagine that happens in church? Who'd have thunk of it? Yeah, there were some who had these spiritual gifts that were a little more pronounced, a little more visible, and others weren't so much. And so Paul was basically, it's where he kind of gave us this great metaphor. The church is a body. The church is a body made up of lots of parts. And we all gravitate toward the pretty parts. The useful parts, the parts that everybody sees and everybody notices and everybody hears. And it was the same way there. The people who everybody heard and saw and who kind of had particular roles, they were the ones who thought themselves more spiritual than everybody else. You know what Paul said? You are intoxicated on your own importance, because the truth of the matter is the gifts that are most valuable are the ones we can't see. You know, it really doesn't frankly matter what you look like if your pancreas quits working. You know, it really doesn't matter what hairstyle you have if your liver's in trouble. It really doesn't matter what kind of clothes you're wearing on those great feet of yours that carry you around if your gallbladder is causing you all kinds of problems. And that's what Paul said. You're going to have a missed understanding of what's most important, what's most valuable. Everybody is. And so then he takes out his pen and he says, because of this great conflict that I'm seeing go on among you and this unity that that creates, we're going to talk about the solution. Love. But not just sentimental love, not love for that object that draws a great memory on the shelf. We're talking about a love that is relational. And we're not talking about the click of a mouse. We're talking about a kind of relationship that you see eyeball to eyeball. You look face to face. You sit across from and you can observe the wrinkles on the hands. You can see the discoloration from years of hard work and toil. You can see the brow that's worked through lots of pain and anguish and grief. You can listen to the voice and you can actually hear the times where they're very disillusioned and unhappy, and you can hurt with them and you can live with them and you can share with them. It's not hidden behind a screen, but it's face to face. It's in real time. And if you read that list again, love is anything but sentimental, and it is quite costly. Did you catch the way that Eugene Peterson captured some of those lines? I didn't get a text message. I'm really going to pull this up faster because I don't have my copy of Peterson's translation here. But if you get some of these things, here we go. Love never gives up, cares more for others than for self, doesn't want what it doesn't have, doesn't strut, have a swelled head, doesn't force itself on others, isn't always me first, and on he goes. Now, you do understand that everything about that description of love is warring against all the ways that you have been formed in the world. So the church, as an incubator of love, is a place that says our primary goal is practicing that form of love, that kind of love. And it will be difficult, and it will be hard, and there will be people who try it. I You know, some days you read a book and you say, gosh, could we just show up on Sunday morning and I could just tell you to go get it and we'd dismiss you? And you'd probably like that. But I was reading this line and I couldn't get it. This guy that I mentioned that went to a church in Abilene, here's what he says. True community brings us into contact with people who expose our jealousies, impatience, intolerance, pettiness, selfishness, and vanity. Consequently, persisting and sticking with community, what the monastic tradition calls a vow of stability, the covenantal promise to stick with each other through thick and thin, is a spiritual discipline where you are working out your salvation with fear and trembling. And then goes on to quote the great Jean Vanier, community is the place where our limitations, our fears, and our egotism are revealed to us. We discover our poverty and our weaknesses, our inability to get on with some people, our mental and emotional blocks, our affective and sexual disturbances, our seemingly insatiable desires, our frustrations and jealousies, our hatred and our wish to destroy. While we are alone, we could believe we loved everyone. Now that we are with others, living with them all the time, we realize how incapable we are of loving, how much we deny to others, how closed in on ourselves we are. Holy moly. Then when you grab a hold of what Paul is saying by writing 1 Corinthians 13, what he's really saying is this. This is what ought to form you. This is the kind of people you ought to be. And listen, it will take some doing. And you'll have to have lots of toboggans. Because along the way, when your own jealousies and pettiness and vanity is exposed, you realize your head's cold, your stomach's empty, and you hope someone hands you a toboggan. You look for someone to buy you lunch so your stomach's full. And if you can learn that, then we ought to learn the reciprocal side of that. We ought to be that kind of people. So when we come to this chapter and we talk about church, we're talking about a sort of love that is self-giving. Let me say that again. We're talking about a love that is self-giving. We tend to function out of a love that is self-serving. But what we find in the Scripture in Jesus the Christ is someone who is self-giving. And celebrating around the table is the ultimate expression of an understanding that we've got a God who is self-giving. And He gave us Himself in Jesus. And if there is a love that we can answer the question, where is it? It will be only by telling them and showing them and living with them what it is to be self-giving. Giving love. So where is it? Well, let's hope that the fires are burning here and that that's what warms us all on our way to handing out lots of toboggans in our world.